It all comes down to this play. A two-point conversion from 3 yards out. Kansas in search of a signature win in year one of the Lance Leipold era. They were so close versus number two Oklahoma just a couple of weeks ago, going back to October the 23rd. Now against Oklahoma's rival on their home field, Kansas has a chance to go for the knockout punch right here. Half the crowd left long ago inside the final minute after an interception. Those that have stayed are on their feet. The defense for Texas imploring them to make some noise. Kansas breaking huddle.
The scoreboard's got it piped up, the music. They'll have to shut that down.
Three receiver sets. Casey, the fullback, lining up wide to the left. Lassiter and Arnold wide right. Now they motion Casey over. Daniels in the gun. He looks right. He's flushed out of the pocket to the right. Throwing on the run. It's caught. It's caught.
Casey.
And Kansas will win.
Holy cow.
Jarrett Casey with the play of his life. And the Jayhawks take down Texas.
From Plainville, Kansas to Austin, Texas. JD threw it to his right in the breadbasket. And he pulled it in. What a play. What a game.
For the first time in program history, the Kansas Jayhawks have won in Austin. You can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win it 57-56. A Kansas winner with Jarrett Casey, the unlikely hero, on a two-point conversion.
And that's why we play the games. That's why sports is the best, because no one in their right mind would have said KU would go to Texas and score 57 points, blow a 21-point lead, but nobody would ever guess they'd have a 21-point lead. On top of that, it was with their third-string quarterback, who had only taken a few snaps this season. Your backup out for the season, injury against K-State. Your starter out due to an injury. They're worried about keeping the red shirt on this kid. Now you're sitting there going, maybe he should have played all year. And the guy that makes the catch to win the ball game is a freshman walk-on fullback who had to play tight end on the play. Because of all the injuries at tight end for KU, a kid named Jarrett Casey from our neck of the woods, Plainville, Kansas. You can't even script it. It is improbable. Is it impossible? Well, obviously it's not. But nobody, and I mean nobody, nobody, except maybe the kids in that locker room and the coaches, thought that they were going to go win at Texas. And you may say, well, Texas isn't very good. They were 4-5. Listen, Texas has 4-star and 5-star recruits. Kansas has one on their whole roster.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas had a third-string quarterback. Oh, Texas, a quarterback had a banged-up thumb. Don't care. KU was with their third-string quarterback, a kid they were going to redshirt, not even play this year. They had a kid playing tight end that was probably their sixth option to play tight end. Seriously. And Jarrett Casey. And I'm watching this game, and I'm just sitting waiting for KU to blow it. I'm just waiting for KU to blow the game. And lo and behold, they very much do. I mean, I fourth down and one, they go for it down 34. That was the right call. Kelly Stoffer is the worst color analyst in all of college football. I've said this before already. He is god-awful. He absolutely doesn't understand football in the decade that is 2021. He has no clue what football is about. He has no idea. Okay, that's an exaggeration. He knows what football is about, but he has no idea on philosophy and strategy. The guy is clueless. And every time I've heard him, he absolutely makes no sense. He did a Nebraska game this year where said Nebraska should kick a field goal when they had missed two already in the game. Their special teams are atrocious, and he's saying they're crazy to go for it. And he said, you take the 3 points. I'm screaming, you don't. They kick a chip shot. My son and I watched, and we were like, what's up with this announcer? Does he not know what Nebraska does? Has he not watched any film or studied anything about them? Because that's kind of part of your job. He says, you take the 3 points. My son and I look at each other like, yeah, if you knew you'd make it.
Yeah.
And it was a chip shot, and guess what happened? They missed it.
Yeah.
What do you know? You don't take your 3 points because there was never guaranteed to have 3 points. The guy's clueless. And the guy is going, he's just like, there's no way KU's going to snap at 4th-and-1 at the 34. Of course they are. They're the underdog. They're 1-8.
Yeah.
They've got nothing to lose. They're 1-8. 1-8. They had scored 49 points up to that point. Why not go for it for a yard instead of punting it? And if you notice, the last time KU punted, it was not a good punt. That's another thing that this guy never pays attention to. What previously happened?
Yeah.
And so I'm watching this game. I'm like, okay, then the play call was, I didn't like the play call on 4th-and-1. They get stuffed. But then KU gets the interception. Right away, everybody's getting all excited. And I tell my oldest son, because we're in Wichita, I watched it in a hotel room. I said, son, there's a 1:10 to go and 3 timeouts. Texas is going to get the ball with about 45 seconds, and they're still going to tie this game. They got the ball with 52 seconds and tied the game. Mm-hmm. And right then and there, my son and I looked at each other like, dude, they've blown it. They're not going to win it. And then in overtime, of course, what happens? Texas, right away, scores a touchdown. They kick the extra point. And right away, him and I are looking at each other like, dude, if somehow Kansas scores a touchdown, you automatically go for two.
Yeah,
this is a no-brainer. You go for two. You don't
wait. I
didn't
have anybody to turn and say that to, but yeah,
that was the duh moment. Like, I mean, hello, you've given up 570 yards of offense. Yeah. Your defense is gassed. You have a third-string quarterback. You're on the road. You're a 31-point underdog. Why in the hell would you not go for two to start overtime? And announcers just act like it's the unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had a good friend of mine like, oh, that took really big, huge guts and kahunas. I'm like, no, it didn't.
No.
If you watch the game, you know Kansas couldn't stop them. Kansas had nothing left in the tank defensively. You are the underdog. You have nothing to lose. You're going nowhere. You're 1-8. That was the easiest decision. Listen, I want to give Lance Leipold a ton of credit, but I don't have to give him a lot of credit on that.
Not that.
That was a no-brainer. That was a duh. Hello. Of course you do. Now, I must say, I didn't think they were going to get it.
It wasn't looking promising.
I was worried about the play call. And as soon as Daniels rolls right, my son and I are like, oh, God. We both are like, oh, dear Lord. And I was like, oh, my God. What are we doing rolling the guy out to throw a pass? Really? And he throws the pass, and Casey, who his parents didn't even know he was on the field, like, is that Jared?
Yeah.
And it's not the Subway guy. He catches it, and he takes this huge hit, and I'm like, oh, dear, he's going to drop it. I mean, he took a huge hit, and he somehow held on to it. Now I'm waiting for the penalty marker because I'm like, there's no way Kansas could have won this game.
Somehow to get Daniels out of the pocket.
There's no way Kansas just won this game. There's no way they actually converted on a two-point conversion. You know, just a few years ago, Kansas went to Austin. They're up 48-47, 1:10 to go, and I was like, too much time, and Texas went down, kicked a chip shot field goal, and won the game 50-48. Kansas did exactly what they're supposed to do. 4th-and-1, go for it, 34, no problem. Play call, questionable. Right away, before they snapped, they're like, I don't like this play call. But the idea going for it was smart. I love it. Kelly Stouffer doesn't know what he's talking about. And then the overtime, the key was a penalty. There was a penalty unsportsmanlike on Texas after the extra point they kicked, which was huge. And once again, the announcer, Kelly Stouffer, who has no clue, is like, why didn't they back him up to kick a longer extra point? I'm like, you, dude, they've got a really good kicker. You think 15 yards is going to make a difference from kicking? Because in the college, you don't start at the 33. In NFL, I would say, yeah, you back him up for a 48-yarder. Mm-hmm. But not in college. He's kicking a 20-yarder, a 19-yarder. So now you back him up, it's a 33, 34-yarder straight on. He's a really good kicker. He's Dicker the kicker. Cameron Dicker the kicker. That's his name, man. He's made all kinds of big kicks. And Stouffer, this guy on TV, he's sitting here going, well, they should move him back. I'm surprised they didn't move him back to kick a longer extra point. I'm like, dude, you can go from the 25 to the 12 and a half in overtime when you have the ball. Duh. You take the 12 and a half yards. Of course you do. And that was a huge penalty. And it was the right decision by Lance Leipold. And that made it so much easier for KU. Mm-hmm. I think if KU had to start from the 25, they wouldn't have scored. I think that was a huge decision. And a bad penalty for Texas. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. I know Max is excited. Max, he deserves it. He and any diehard KU football fan deserves this win. You've waited. Since I was 32 years of age, you've waited. 56 Big 12 road losses in a row. Last time KU won a conference road game was 2008. That was the year KU won the national title in basketball. That was Mario Chalmers. That was Mario's miracle. That was Memphis KU. That was 08. That was KU 08, 13 years ago. So the Jayhawks snapped an 8-game losing streak this year. They snapped a 56-game Big 12 road losing streak. They snapped a league losing streak at 18 overall, their first conference victory since beating Texas Tech at home in 2019. And the two guys that made the play that you'll remember forever, even though KU's not going bowling and Texas is now a 4-6 team that's lost five in a row for the first time since 1956, the two guys that made the biggest play in KU football history, at least in the modern age since the Orange Bowl, is a 6-foot, 254-pound walk-on for Plainville, who had not taken any offensive snaps in any games prior to Saturday against Texas. Junior tight end Mason Fairchild was out with an injury, a starter. The other tight ends were out. Fullbacks tight ends were hurt. So Casey steps in as a walk-on from little Class 1A Plainville, and he's the one that makes the catch. And a guy they were going to redshirt, a third-string quarterback, Jalen Daniels, all he does is goes 21 of 30 for 202 yards and four total touchdowns. KU was a 31-point underdog. They led 35-14 at halftime. Oh, yeah, and there's a freshman from Lawrence, Devin Neal, 24 carries, 143 yards and three touchdowns. Yes, Texas had 574 yards of offense, but KU was plus four in the turnover margin, didn't turn it over at all, and got a pick six from their defense. It's insane. Is Texas the better team? Yeah, they are the better team. There's no doubt. If you're minus four and you have a chance to win, I've said it before, the Chiefs-Chargers, the Chiefs were the better team that day. They just were minus four in turnover margin. Mm-hmm. They beat themselves. I mean, Texas, I don't want to take anything away from Kansas, but listen, if you're plus four, you should win by more than 1 point on a last-second play in overtime. That means Texas is the more talented team. But at the end of the day, that's the great equalizer, is turnovers, that you take advantage of those turnovers. And Kansas absolutely did that. And it is so crazy for this to happen. Here's Lance Leipold on the win overall. It's not normal that we start the sports ticket with KU football, but we are today.
Just so proud of them. You know, we played well. Obviously, momentum and a lot of things slipped away there in the fourth quarter. Special teams kind of faltered a little bit. And for us to persevere, and we made a decision early that if we score, we're going for two. We're going for the win, especially with the new rules the way they are. But, you know, so many gritty performances and plays. We didn't turn the ball over, right? And what did we get, four? So, I mean, you know, just those things, some big plays, some guys stepping up. Trevor Cardell made some big catches. And of course, Jared Casey there at the end. You see Amari Hickson get in, and, you know, he does some things in his few carries. Obviously, Jalen Daniels. I mean, for a guy that's been, you know, waiting in the wings, redshirting, kind of staying prepared. And that's the key to that whole thing. I think we talked about that for quite a while, is how much he had stayed locked into this thing where a lot of guys, you know, and he's so young. And for him to have that type of maturity is really impressive.
It really is. Here's Coach Leipold on winning as a heavy underdog.
We're David, and they're Goliath, and we go out there and play. And, you know, that's been the one thing I think that I've really been impressed, and we talked about a little bit at halftime, was, you know, we played well against OU as well, but we didn't finish, okay, and as well as we liked, and that was a heartbreaker. So for us to battle this one, at this stage of the game being 1-8, it really says a lot about these young men that we have in the locker room right now.
It really does. I mean, this is a team, you know, they could have felt really sorry for themselves. They did their best job of blowing a 21-point lead. They did. I mean, they made mistakes and so forth. But that I've said this all along. I think Lance Leipold is the right guy. They finally got the right guy. They went through the retread options. They finally got a guy that wants to be there, that wants to build something special. And it's crazy that their two best games of the year have come against Oklahoma and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've done nothing against anybody else offensively. And then this time, a third-string quarterback. It's all about building off of this win now, as KU's got the nation's attention.
Yeah, it's about them. Listen to them. I mean, they've been starving. And, you know, it's one win. It's, you know, we got to build on it. You know, this will be a great 24, 48 hours, but you have to keep working at it. And, you know, either way, we got to get back to work and see if we can finish this thing even stronger. But, you know, we haven't beat an FBS football team in this program here for a couple of years, and it's been a while. And to have some success here, we're coming back to this state next week, and we've got to be ready to play.
That's the thing. How do you handle success? When you get a great win, how do you come back the next week? You know, this is a very big trend that we're seeing in football this year, and it's happening at the professional level too. Mm-hmm. You know, I predicted the Broncos were going to lose the Eagles at home because I felt they were going to be fat and happy after beating the Cowboys, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what happened. You can see these things coming a little bit. You could see the Ravens going a short week going into Miami and going to have problems, and they did, and they lost. They didn't look good doing it. We have seen high school football teams get a big win, and the next week you're just kind of scratching your head going, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. You know, we saw it with Russell. They beat TMP next week. They had a really bad game. TMP had a huge win over Hoisington, didn't score a point against Kingman, and I wondered about that. Mm-hmm. I wondered about, okay, you got that great win over Hoisington, and everybody's patting you on the back, and TMP's not used to being in that situation with their football program, and all of a sudden they're at home, and they don't score a point and get rolled by Kingman. And I don't think Kingman's probably 35 points better than TMP. Maybe they are, mm-hmm. but TMP obviously didn't play well. Give Kingman credit. Now the question is, how's Kingman going to handle success? Because they've never been to the state semifinal since 1972, whereas Beloit was just last year. We'll talk more high school football playoffs when we get a chance here in a little bit. But the point being is that you see it in college all the time. You see a team have a great win. Well, even Nebraska, they play the tough teams really, really close and then turn around and lose to a Minnesota. You know, it is amazing what we see. We saw the Bengals do it. The Bengals had a gigantic, huge, just blew the Ravens out of the building, turn around, lost to the Jets the next week. Mm-hmm. It is just amazing to me how a team can have a great win. They followed up with a huge, huge, huge goose egg. Kansas did it already this year. They played great against Oklahoma, turned around, and got absolutely blown, annihilated, down 38-0 against Oklahoma State before halftime, and Oklahoma State had pulled their starting quarterback in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. So Kansas, this is awesome. They've got this win. No matter what happens, nobody can take it away from them. But as Lance Leipold said, he goes, we need to build off of it. They didn't really build off of the Oklahoma near win. They really didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't play well for a few weeks after that. Jalen Daniels, who just unbelievable what he was able to accomplish. I would have never thunk he could do what he did, especially passing the ball against Texas with all these athletes, these 4 stars and 5 stars. Here's Jalen Daniels on it's a matter of building, man.
What does this win mean to you personally?
I just want to build on it. I want to be able to build my teammates and be able to build for the future.
How does a win like this provide confidence for this team moving forward now, this season, and in the future?
It gives all the confidence in the world because we know we can do it. We know that we can do it. There's some games this year where we weren't able to pull out in the fourth quarter. This time my team showed grit in the fourth quarter. Every down counted, and we were able to play our hearts out.
Now what do you do? Daniels, he can play one of the last 2 games and they could still keep his red shirt, but he can't play both. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go on the road against TCU, is Bean healthy? Does he become the starter again? And you have Daniels not play and then save him for the home finale when the hometown fans, there are going to be more fans there mm-hmm. supporting the team against West Virginia after that big win over Texas. Too bad that they can't be at home now. They got to go to TCU this Saturday. But to me, He was asked that question afterwards by the reporter. Jalen Daniels says, I trust my coaches. I trust my coach. I trust the process. And that is huge. Mm-hmm. That is huge because I really didn't hear that from KU guys under Les Miles and the last few coaches. I do hear. And that's something for a kid. You guarantee he wants to play really badly. At the same time, why waste a whole year of eligibility if he's going to play like he did against Texas? Restart 0-0 next year and he's your quarterback. Fine. Have him for another 3 years. If I'm Lance Leipold, I don't waste him this year. KU's 2-8. They're not going anywhere. Even though it was a great win, they're going nowhere. Yeah. So to me, there is no reason to waste the red shirt unless everybody's hurt. And that's why he played, because everybody was hurt. So if you're a KU fan, I think you should be really, really hoping that Jason Bean can play this week against TCU and get through this next game. If he can, then you don't have to burn the red shirt for Jalen Daniels. Mm-hmm.
That's the approach that I would have, and I would think –
I think Lance Leipold.
I don't think Jason Bean's that far away from being ready.
I agree.
From what I understand,
I agree.
And so I think he should be ready to go next week. And it's fun. It was exciting, and you know, Jalen Daniels earned a lot of things moving forward with this group, right? By picking up that win. But you don't, if you want to have success down the line and your plan was to redshirt him, that plan shouldn't change just because you won one game and you're 2-8 now instead of 1-9.
It'd be different if you're fighting for bowl eligibility, but you're not.
Yeah, so it's just Listen, there's a lot of things when he played last year that I liked about his game. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably why they wanted to redshirt him, get him a little bit more experience, get him some time here, and then moving forward, he could probably be your starter. And I think that's the plan, you know, going forward. But, yeah, you don't mortgage that or risk that on a 2-8 team.
He was 17 when he started last year under Les Miles. And he, you can tell he put on some muscle. You can tell he's been in the weight room working on his game. And, man, oh, man alive. He looked really good, and nobody saw it coming. Nobody.
No, not like that.
No, no way. No way, Jose. So, pretty cool stuff. And, yes, of course you go for two in overtime. I mean, that was the easiest decision. And I just I get blown away by people that get all riled up about a coach going for a fourth and one like he's got these – like he's the bravest person in the world. It's like, no, dude, if you watch the game and understand the way the game is going, it's about flow, it's about feel. And there's no doubt Kansas defense was gassed. You're a 31-point underdog. You have a third-string quarterback. You got like a fifth-string tight end and Casey kid catching the ball. No, you don't. But the longer the game goes, the worse chance you have of winning. That's why I thought they were going to lose in overtime. I was like, they blew their chance in regulation because the longer this game goes, Texas is going to win. So why would you let it go to a double overtime, just kicking an extra point? And I'm going to tell you something, extra point's not a guarantee either. With KU, I was waiting for them. I was like, "Oh God!" I didn't think they were going to kick extra point. I thought they were going for two, but when they kicked it, if they were going to kick the extra point, I've been nervous they're going to miss that and lose the game that way. So there's no reason to let the game continue. If you're KU, you say, "Hey, it's on my terms. One play to win it all. It's on our hands. We're on serve in tennis. We have a chance to serve the ace and win it. Simple as that. It's on my serve, my racket. I'm going to finish it." That's exactly what they did, and it was one heck of a play by Daniels to Casey, and that's the play that's going to live for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Casey's not going to ever probably have a bigger play in his life than that the rest of his career.
No. I mean, he might develop and play a bit at fullback or tight end for that team, but he's not going to surpass that unless, you know, they just blow everybody out of the water here and, like, makes a catch in a national championship game or something, which isn't happening. But, you know, it's those kind of things just don't come around a whole lot.
No, pretty amazing stuff. So, Rock Chalk Jayhawk, KU fans, you deserve it. If you're a real diehard KU fan, you deserve it. And it does show progress with Lance Leipold. It does change the narrative of what Kansas is doing. Now, on the Texas side, congratulations. You got a coach that I told you was average when you hired him. You fired a guy that Tom Herman, who had a very good overall record in 3 years at Texas, you fired him to bring in Steve Sarkisian, who had to battle alcoholism and has defeated that, or at least, for now he has. And he did not win like 10, 11, 12 games at USC. He went to Alabama, and I hate to say it, but I think anybody can be a great offensive coordinator at Alabama as long as you've got some kind of coaching pedigree.
You have knowledge of the game, you can succeed.
Yes, because they don't miss a beat no matter when they change offensive coordinators. No. Lane Kiffin, the Steve Sarkisian, to whoever they got now, it doesn't matter. Alabama's fine offensively. So you put too much stock in the fact he's Alabama assistant on a high-powered offense, and so Texas spends all this money in their boosters, and guess what? You're worse off now. You lost 5 in a row. You're 4-6. I mean, and K-State now sitting there going, well, we're going to win that game because Texas won't even care. Those players won't even care the final game of the year, I don't think.
They
didn't even look like they cared sometimes in this game.
Yeah.
So, and you wonder if the players have checked out on the coach, and that's a bad sign when you only play 10 games for the coach.
Yeah.
So Tom Herman's got to be kicking back, relaxing, counting his money, going, eh. Tried to tell you so. And this is another reason why you stick with Scott Frost at Nebraska. And I know that Tom Herman had a much better record than Scott Frost did.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always said, if it's not Scott Frost, who's the better candidate? Who's the better option? And Texas, they decided Tom Herman wasn't the guy. And so the better option was Steve Sarkisian. And I looked at the records, and we compared him, talked about him on the show when he got hired. I'm like, dude, this is a poor man's Tom Herman.
Yeah.
So, okie dokie.
Yeah.
So congrats to Texas. You're 4-6, and what are you going to do, fire him and pay more money and go get another guy? I mean, do you think a coach wants to go into Texas when you keep firing guys after a couple of years? That doesn't make it as attractive, except if you want to cash the check and then count it while you get fired, which I'm available again to be the head football coach at Texas or TCU or anybody that wants to pay me to fire me, or Texas Tech is the one I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You give me 2 years, and that's all you're going to give me? Fine. I'll get fired. I'll take that pink slip. As long as you keep paying me when the rest of my contract, like you're going to do. All right, K-State, they're on a roll. They beat West Virginia 34-17. Special teams again. They got a block punt, which was a huge play in the ball game, and K-State wins, and they're 7-3.
It's the punt from Tyler Sumter.
K-State with a block punt. The other key play was West Virginia came back and made it interesting, and Coach Kleiman went for it. What was it, 4th and 7, 4th and 8?
Yep.
With Skylar Thompson. They completed it. That was a huge play in the game, obviously. I like how Coach Kleiman's going for it, being more aggressive, trusting his quarterback. That was on a 4th down, a 35-yard completion down the seam to tight end Sammy Wheeler, and that was really the play that broke the camel's back in that one. Skylar wasn't great in regards to numbers, 14-19 for 138 and a touchdown, but K-State snaps a 5-game losing streak to West Virginia. That's a game K-State wanted very, very badly. K-State now 7-3 overall, 4-3 in the Big 12. They'll meet Baylor coming up on Saturday, and of course that's going to be an interesting one because Baylor beat Oklahoma. More on that in a moment. But Chris Kleiman, head coach of K-State, really, really pleased with the win over West Virginia.
Great win, great team win. So excited for the guys and for the coaches. Couldn't be happier with us beating a really good West Virginia team. West Virginia's doggone good. I've got so much respect for Neil Brown. He's a great coach. They have physical players. They're really athletic, and our guys just found a way. It wasn't pretty all the time, but we found a way, and we capitalized on some things, whether it was a block punt, big kick return. We were able to get a couple of turnovers. All those things played into it. We've won 4 in a row, and that's really tough to do. I don't care what the competition is. It's 4 in a row in this league. It is a heck of a lot of fun, and excited for the guys.
K-State was up 24-3. It was 24-17. Of course, the 4th down play, and that set up a Deuce Vaughn touchdown run. Deuce, another good game, 121 yards on 25 carries and a touchdown. His 6th 100-yard rushing performance of the season, and his numbers continue to climb with his career yardage and touchdowns. And, of course, special teams you, as I like to call K-State, with the block punt for a touchdown. That was a big play, obviously, as you just heard. And K-State has won 4 in a row, and you look at K-State's situation now. They got a 4:30 kickoff this Saturday against Baylor. Baylor, here's your perfect setup for K-State. Mm-hmm. Think about this. K-State's got the perfect setup for the next 2 games. Perfect setup. Baylor's coming off the emotional, huge, unbelievable win against Oklahoma. Baylor just looked past TCU the week prior against the interim coach. They rallied around the interim coach, Jerry Kill. TCU beat him 30-28. Baylor was looking past TCU. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They were looking ahead to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
We can get in the college football playoff, blah, 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 blah. And they lost. Then they turn around, got up, ready to go, beat Oklahoma, dominated the second half. Now they're going to go to Manhattan. They're going to feel good about themselves. How do you handle success at every level of sports? That's the key to having sustained success, is how you handle success week in and week out. The teams that have been there, done that, they handle it week in and week out. It's the teams that aren't used to it that don't handle it very well. And I think that's a perfect setup for K-State to get Baylor coming into their house on Saturday. Then you look at Friday, November 26th, a short week. K-State will go to Texas. Texas is 4-6 right now. Texas at West Virginia this Saturday, and I would say they're going to lose that game. And if Texas loses that game, they're 4-7, and they want nothing to do with playing K-State. Don't even want to play a last game, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a perfect setup. And for, as Cody says, I like to use his comment, all the clowns that went into the closet that wanted to climb and fired are now going to have to eat crow, because K-State could very well be 9-3 going into a bowl game and have a 10-win season. That's why you have to have patience. I always find it ironic when fans are preaching patience to, well, Mahomes needs to be more patient. At the same time, they're quitting on their football team. Like, wait a minute, that's a complete hypocrite. You're talking about being patient, but yet you won't be patient with your own team. Well, Skylar needs to be more patient, not leave the pocket so early, keep his eyes downfield. Yet you're a K-State fan going, well, Kleiman needs to be fired. We're 3-3, and this is ridiculous. We haven't won a Big 12 game in a year. Well, you have no patience either. How can you criticize a player for not being patient when you aren't? I find it ironic.
Yeah.
I find it ironic. what are your thoughts on K-State's win?
There was a little bit of a lull in there in the middle of the game. You know, they came out, got the tip interception, and went 6 plays right down the field, and they just dominated that defensive line for West Virginia, the K-State offensive line did. And I was like, hey, this is going to be easy if it's like this all day. It wasn't, and, you know, that's going to change. You know, you had momentum after the interception, and they carried that. And, you know, they had some misses, you know, on offense there at times, but, you know, like we talked about with the Chiefs, they rallied it together. You're not going to apologize for winning. You've won 4 in a row in the Big 12, and you get the win. And, yeah, the 4th down and 8 play, and you knew it right when you were watching it, that this is going to be – this could be the difference in the game in the end. And they converted it, and then they went down and scored the touchdown, and you knew that the game was pretty well over at that point, because they had done the two things that they really needed to do, which was convert the fourth down and then get another score to just kind of feel more comfortable after West Virginia had come all the way back within one touchdown. So it was a good game. I mean, they hadn't beaten West Virginia since 2015, so they were pretty hyped about that. And you never apologize for winning in this league and in a Power Five conference four in a row. And all the momentum is with them right now, and like we've been talking about all morning, it's carry that success on and take it with you to Baylor to the game against Baylor next week in Manhattan.
You know, it's interesting when you look at a season, and every team's season, there is a turning point, or there is a scare, or there is a bad break.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll go back to the Chiefs in 2019 when they won the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes, it looked like, was done for the season in Denver, lying on the ground on a quarterback sneak, and you thought the season was over. And somehow, miraculously, a dislocated kneecap, no structural damage, missed just two games, came back, Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Mm. Had that gone differently, we know the Chiefs wouldn't have won the Super Bowl. You look at Skylar Thompson. He goes down. It looked like he had ripped up his knee. It was non-contact. It looked like he'd been shot by somebody with a shotgun. And you were like, immediately, when I saw it, I'm like, he's done. His career's over.
Mm.
I think a lot of people thought that. And somehow,
Chris Kleiman thought that.
Sure he did.
Tell by his reaction.
Listen, and then all of a sudden he's able to come back, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks later, and he's able to play, and he's just getting stronger and stronger. And you sit here and say, would this K-State team be 7-3 without Skylar Thompson? No way.
No way. No.
In fact, I think they might be sitting with just four wins and be not even bowl eligible, and then people might be still clamoring for him, Kleiman, to be fired. So that happens a lot of times in sports, is there's that point in time where you get a horrible injury that cost you your season, or you have one that is a scare, and you get a little bit lucky where your guy's not out for the season when you thought he was going to be. And those are two great examples for me, is what happened with the Chiefs when they won it all, and what K-State's doing this year is a quarterback dodged a huge bullet when it looked like their season was over.
And then waking up in the second half against Texas Tech, to turn that game around, because if you don't win that game, it's a different season too. And
what if you don't make the safety in the end zone?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That guy's come up big, and you can look at different guys that have made plays that, man, if he wasn't out there on the field, where would this team be at right now? And that was turning points. Obviously, that was the turning point for this K-State team, was the comeback against Texas Tech.
No doubt. That was huge. That was a turning point as well. So K-State wins. They're 7-3, and they've won four in a row. Big 12 wrap. Well, the big game in the Big 12, of course, the shocker was KU knocking off Texas and doing it in the way they did. That was the great cap of the night, the nightcap for the Big 12 on Saturday. It was also, I tell you what, for all those schools in the Big 12 that really are tired of Texas, Oklahoma, and saying good luck in the SEC, it was a good weekend for you, because Baylor takes down OU.
Triple zeros on the clock, a field goal on the final play of the game, and Baylor ends Oklahoma's unbeaten season. The Bears snap the Sooners' winning streak at 17. Baylor wins in Big 12 play over Oklahoma, 27-14, the final score.
All right, so we were heading down to Wichita, and I did not get to see hardly any of the game. And I knew that OU was down by 10, and so I asked my wife, I said, hey, can you funnel this through the phone real quick so I can hear the last minute or so of Oklahoma and Baylor?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was getting it, and by the time it finally connected, I get Toby Rowland, who we've had on the show before, the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, talking about how OU, this is ridiculous and this is embarrassing. The players are having to come back out, that they could have easily made it to where they didn't have to have one more play of the officials. And Lincoln Riley wasn't happy, and they'd already stormed the field, Baylor had. And I'm listening to this going, no, this is silly. I mean, Baylor was up 10. The game was over. There's no need to snap it one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we happened to just tune in at the right time to listen to all this. And then Baylor decides, after everybody's cleared back off the field, and OU brings 11 players out there, which, I'll be honest with you, if I was a head coach in that situation, I think I would have just told them, you know what, our guys will stand on the very corner of the end zone, and we're not going to line up at all, which there's no rule that says you have to.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to have 11 on the field, apparently, which I think is a joke. If Lincoln Riley tells those officials, listen, we've already gone to the locker room, we're not coming out due to player safety, they're going to storm the field again, so go ahead and let them do whatever they want to do, okay? They want to run it for a touchdown. They want to take a knee, kick a field goal, whatever. I'm not putting my kids in harm's way. But apparently the rule is that you got to come back out and do this. This has happened in NFL games where they bring people back out to kick an extra point when the game's over and everybody's celebrating like, well, we got to do the conversion. Because of tiebreakers. That's mm-hmm. That's why they do it. It's because of tiebreakers. So if I was Lincoln Riley, I would have said, you know what, guys, you get barely on the field. If you have to technically on the field, don't even line up. Don't even take a chance. Okay? And I got to worry about the safety of my players. So then Dave Aranda, head coach of Baylor, apparently gets the memo that, hey, you know what? If there's a three-way tie between us and, say, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, it could come down to margin of victory. And once it comes down to margin of victory, that eliminates one team, and then you go head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true, actually. So Dave Aranda and Baylor, they go ahead and line up for a field goal. Now, I understand Dave Aranda saying that this is part of the equation, right? The tiebreaker mm-hmm. situation. Here's my question. Didn't they take a knee the play prior to that?
I didn't see it.
I thought they did. I didn't see it either. I think they did, but yeah. I don't know for sure. But here's the thing. If you're worried about scoring points for a tiebreaker, why are you settling for a field goal?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you trying to score a touchdown? See, I think that's a bit of hogwash. I understand technically Dave Aranda's right. But it's the same thing when I talk with, and I've told you this story before. I've talked to a high school football coach in this state over the years. I talked to a coach in southeast Kansas mm-hmm. where I knew they recruited. I knew they recruited. The coach said something to me and says, hey, I heard you said something on the radio. And I wasn't even doing the game for that team.
Mm-hmm.
And some fan was listening when I was at a football game in northeast Kansas. Fan from out of town was listening to our broadcast. And I just mentioned the word recruiting. I mentioned it. I didn't go in great detail or anything. That fan then, of course, this is why you never know when people are listening. This fan then told the head coach of the football team, who I actually knew from my time when I was down at Pittsburgh mm-hmm. State. So then he calls me up. And he was very nice about it. And he says, Wade, I heard that – I just wanted to talk to you. I heard that you said that we recruit down here. And I just want to tell you that that's – we do not. We coaches do not recruit down here, blah, blah, blah. And I bit my tongue, and I totally listened to him. And I said, you know what? Fine, whatever. You want to feel the way you want to feel. He said, we, the coaches, don't recruit. Technically, he's probably telling me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, he's right. But I know boosters did. Mm-hmm. You know how I know that? Because the year prior, they had a 2,000-yard running back who graduated. They had nobody ready to slide into the running back spot. And then a year later, lo and behold, a kid moved in 30 miles from out of state, and his dad got a job with the biggest booster of the high school football program. And you're telling me they don't recruit? And the coach hides behind, well, we as coaches don't recruit. Okay, technically you might be right
mm-hmm.
that you don't, but you're aware of what's going on, and you're not going to stop it. You're not going to turn down a guy that can run for 1,000 yards, a great running back that transfers in when you have a hole at running back. Hello? You're not going to turn it down. So, no, you do recruit. It's just that you don't do it. Your boosters do the dirty work for you. Okay, the same thing here. It's like Dave Aranda is sitting here going, well, you know, the tiebreaker thing. You know, he's hiding behind the tiebreaker, and he says this tiebreaker thing. When he, honestly, let's be honest about this. He wasn't planning on kicking a field goal, and he hides behind that. But really what it was I got a chance to get 3 points, and yes, I heard about the tiebreaker, but I would come back with, why didn't you go for a touchdown? If you're so big into the tiebreaker, all right, you're so big into the tiebreaker, then why are you settling for 3? Isn't 7 more than 3? I mean, they were, what was it? They were at the 25 or 30, somewhere in there. I mean, you could have easily thrown the ball, called a play, had a deep post, whatever it was, take a shot at the end zone to get 7. If you're really, truly worried about the point situation, you would have lined up right off the bat. Called a timeout and kicked a field goal mm-hmm. instead of letting what happened. So I don't completely buy that. I think he's hiding behind that, just like the coach I talked to in high school was hiding behind the fact that his boosters did the dirty work for him, and he could technically say, listen, I did it. I didn't do anything. I don't recruit. Okay, I wasn't rubbing it in against Oklahoma. I just was – there's a tiebreaker, and I'm just playing by the rules here. I don't fully buy it. I think this was Baylor wanting to stick it to Oklahoma, and I don't blame him. I do not blame him. You know what I would like to see? This is what I would like to see from Dave Aranda. Listen, Oklahoma and Texas held this conference hostage. for a very long time. They both decided to leave, which threatened our viability, and we almost lost our conference, okay? And we have a chance, our last chance. This is probably the last time Oklahoma comes to our house. And yeah, hell yeah, we are going to stick it to them. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, it helps on our tiebreaker margin. But yeah, we are. I would love for a coach to come out and be honest about it. Don't hide behind it. Do you really buy that's what Dave Aranda was thinking all along? Get a field goal? Because by that logic, why aren't you going for a touchdown?
Yeah, I don't. Listen, it was a deal where he was able to be like, oh,
hide
yeah,
behind
hey,
the tiebreaker.
Here's something I can say.
Sure.
I think what I honestly think it was is the way Lincoln reacted to the crowd coming out and yeah. just going nuts.
Then I think you want to
and
stick
I think
it to
Dave
him.
Aranda's like, well, I'm going to show you, man.
That's right.
If
I
you're really
so
going to be mad about this,
I think
about
so.
This,
right.
I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
I'll give you something to be mad about.
Right.
As the way I
agree.
Interpreted what happened at the end of that game.
I agree.
Again, it's convenient, though, to be able to be like,
yeah.
hey, there's a tiebreaker of margin of victory. You know, right. And if Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State by this score or this score, right. whatever, you know.
Yeah. And once again, he technically is correct, just yeah. like the high school coach saying, technically we coaches don't recruit.
Yeah.
But we know what the truth is.
Yeah. I honestly fully believe that it was the reaction
yes.
of Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley to the fans storming the field a second early.
I will defend Lincoln Riley is you got to protect your kids.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that part of
so
what
I,
he was frustrated
so
about.
I honestly don't have a problem with either coach as long as they just come out and be honest about it.
Yeah.
I don't like hiding behind that. That's the thing I don't like about Dave Aranda. Like, you got the stones to do it, but you don't have the stones to just come out and say, I wanted to stick it to them.
Yeah.
We don't like them. And we're probably never going to see him in Waco again anyway. That's what I would do. But anyway, here's Lincoln Riley on the Baylor field goal and the crowd rushing the field.
I care about the safety of my players, and I'm watching David Uwebu just get bum rushed by three guys. I'm pulling him off. He's pulling him off. You know, I know why Dave tried to kick the field goal. I don't agree with it. I still think, above all else, there's a code of sportsmanship that – I believe in. I wouldn't have done it, but that's his decision. It's his football team. How the officials don't give us enforce a 15-yard penalty when you probably got 5,000 people on the field is unbelievable to me. It is what it is. I mean, that's his decision. That's the official's decision. I don't agree with it, but part of it.
And that's a good point Lincoln Riley makes. I mean, the game was not
sure,
over.
Yeah.
That should have been a 15-yard penalty. He's absolutely correct. Now, people that don't like Oklahoma, no matter what Oklahoma says, you're not going to be objective. If you're a K-State, KU fan, you're probably not going to be objective. You're like, boo-hoo-hoo, you lost, you're being a poor sport. No. If you put yourself, if KU or K-State in that same situation, you'd be screaming on how is there not a 15-yard penalty. You would be
For
worried
sure,
about
yeah.
the safety
yeah.
of your players. Chris Klieman would be, Lance Leipold. They would do the exact same thing Lincoln Riley did. Now the question is, would Lance Leipold and Chris Klieman and Lincoln Riley do what Dave Aranda did and kick a field goal after all that? I don't think.
Here's one.
I don't
thing
think
that,
Klieman would, and I don't think Leipold would, and I'm pretty sure Riley wouldn't do it either because OU has been there, done that. Now, I think if you're trying to gain more respect, or in some cases, this you lose some respect, but when you're trying to build the program, and Baylor's they've been in the doldrums because of Art Briles' situation, and then Dave Aranda's resurrected it. I understand, you know, but just be up front and explain. Just be a man and say, yeah, we did it because we're tired of hearing about how great OU and Texas are, and so we stuck it to them.
Yeah. Hey, here's the thing. I fully believe that Klieman and Leipold would definitely take a knee on that.
Yeah.
And just if we had to come out and run this last play for a second, okay, and they're probably putting in a backup quarterback to
right.
do it, right? Because
right.
these people might be mad and go after my guy.
Right.
But I'm not sold on Lincoln Riley saying, nah, I wouldn't do that. Lincoln Riley has just that enough amount of pettiness, I think, in a spur-of-the-moment thing like that. I'm not talking like
he thought about it.
I think he would have
ran a play to score a touchdown. I don't think
he actually might have done that, yeah.
That's what
yeah.
I think.
Which is even worse if you actually score the touchdown, right? You're rubbing it even
yeah,
more
right, right.
if you go score the touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't believe when Lincoln Riley says I absolutely wouldn't have done that. You know, there's a sportsmanship code. I what's the cutoff time of when you add more points? Because with like a minute and 20 left in 2018, he made a field goal against Baylor to make it 66-33.
Yeah.
So like, where's the cutoff of,
Good point.
Where you stop
Good point.
And where you don't add points?
Right.
That's you could take a knee there.
True.
I don't know if Baylor had any timeouts in 2018 on that play or not. But
right.
Of course, it's probably fourth down, so it doesn't matter if they had timeouts or not. It would have been turnover on downs. But I just don't – you know, where does that stop? But the spur of the moment, the way if it is what I feel, that Dave Aranda was frustrated and just wanted to stick it to him, I think spur of the moment, Lincoln Riley would actually – absolutely make that decision, whether it's to go for a field goal or say, hey, we're going to stick it to him more
right.
and get six right here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy that he wouldn't do that. I mean, it's a heat of the moment
sure.
decision.
Right.
It's not a thing that you're processing and thinking out. It's like, okay, I got mad right now. I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not saying he would. I'm just saying I'm not.
No, I agree with
automatically you. Saying that he's not going to
no,
do
no,
that.
No, I agree with you. Of the three I just brought
but Kleiman
up.
Kleiman and Leipold for sure
I'm,
would be like,
I'm very
no
confident.
Way Kleiman would do that.
I don't think Leipold would either. I'm very
and I,
confident.
You know, I know Kleiman a little bit right. better than Leipold. Obviously, that's my team. But
I'm very confident
and Leipold
those
wouldn't
two,
do it either.
I'm very confident those two wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think Riley would be a little bit more questionable. I don't think he would on the very final play of the game like that.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, he'll score until you get to an obvious take-a-knee situation. You might be right. Baylor might have had timeouts when he did that back then. I don't know.
And he wouldn't have the thing to hide behind about the tiebreaker either because he'd still be undefeated in the league.
Right. True. True.
It wouldn't need the tiebreaker.
True. Of course, any coach could argue that, though, whether you're undefeated or not.
You could say, yeah.
Because
yeah.
how do you know you're going to win the rest of your games?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point. Okay, top 25, Cincinnati beat South Florida 45-28, and then Alabama beat New Mexico State 59-3, and Alabama moved up in one of the polls above Cincinnati. So beating New Mexico State is more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, congrats. I told you it was going to happen. Mississippi State beat number 17 Auburn 43-34. Wisconsin number 18 beat Northwestern 35-7. Number 6 Michigan got by Penn State 21-17. We mentioned Baylor number 13 over Oklahoma number 8 27-14. Georgia took care of Tennessee 41-17. Ohio State number 4 blew out number 19 Purdue 59-31. Iowa got by Minnesota 27-22. Michigan State beat Maryland 40-21. Michigan State ranked 7th. Ole Miss number 15 beat A&M number 11 29-19. That helped Alabama in some ways. Arkansas over LSU 16-13. Notre Dame beat Virginia 28-3. Notre Dame's got a good chance to make the playoff if they went out. Yay. Wake Forest beat North Carolina State 45-42. Oklahoma State rolled TCU 63-17. There's another example. You pull off the upset against Baylor, go to Stillwater, and lose by 46. Another example of what I'm talking about. Just 1 week you play well, next week you just don't even focus. Oregon got by Washington State 38-24. And in the Big 12, Iowa State they lost to Texas Tech. Tech hit a 62-yard field goal to win it, 41-38. So Iowa State now goes to Oklahoma this weekend at 11 a.m. That was what many thought would be a Big 12 championship preview, and now Iowa State completely out of it. And OU in a must-win, maybe. Texas at West Virginia at 11 a.m. KU at TCU at 3 o'clock. Baylor at K-State 4:30. Oklahoma State at Texas at 7 o'clock. By the way, Oklahoma losing, I think you can put a fork in them for the college football playoff. Because they weren't getting credit for being undefeated anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they were really impressive and getting a lot of credit being undefeated and then lost, I would say they'd be fine. The problem for Oklahoma is this loss comes late in the season. Usually they lose one early, can work their way all the way back. And it is – people say it's about the losses. No, unfortunately, that's how it should be, but it's about when you lose. The further we get away from Ohio State losing to Oregon, the more people forget it. The further that we get away from Alabama losing earlier in conference season to A&M, the more we forget about it. Whereas if you lose right now, it's just like twice the amount of losses. And it's not right. Shouldn't be that way. But it is what it is. And Oklahoma lost to the 13th-ranked team in the country. That's not a horrible loss, okay?
Yeah.
But they will probably be on the outside looking in. Now, I don't think they're going to run the table. I think Oklahoma State might get them this year. Oklahoma State's defense is legitimate. Oklahoma's changed quarterbacks now again during that game, Caleb Williams to Spencer Rattler. And what's lost in the whole Baylor fiasco at the end with Oklahoma and the crowd, the field goal, is that Baylor dominated the second half. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They dominated it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely dominated that game. So OU's got their problems here. Iowa State comes to town. That won't be easy. Then you go to Stillwater for Bedlam. That's going to be a heck of a game. I know OU's had O-State's number over the years, but I don't know. It might be different this year. And then, of course, you could have a rematch. You could have OU and O-State playing again a week later, which I don't like that, but that's what the Big 12 did because they need another data point.
Yeah.
So I think the Big 12's toast in regards to getting anybody in the playoff is what I'm saying.
Oh, for sure.
Oklahoma State would have the best chance now, maybe.
Yeah, if they would win out, they would for sure. But yeah. I feel like, you know, I don't know. Maybe I just don't feel like they're going to get jumping all over all those teams, right? Like,
right.
Even Big Ten teams with one loss are going to be way ahead of them.
I agree.
I don't see it happening for the Big 12 this year.
Especially Notre Dame is going to win out. Their schedule looks pretty easy the rest of the way, too.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn our attention to high school football before we get to the Chiefs here. Well, before I get to that, the MIAA, we had football over the weekend, and we can update you on what took place there. Pittsburgh State did beat Fort Hays State 34-24. Washburn won by 10 over Missouri Southern. Northwest Missouri State 35-7 over Emporia State. Northwest Missouri State and Washburn both made it into the Division II playoffs. First time since 2011 Washburn's made it to the playoffs. And how about this? Northwest Missouri State is in the playoffs for the 17th consecutive year.
Yeah.
17th consecutive year. They're 9-1, and they won the MIAA, which is considered by many the toughest conference in Division II. So interesting stuff there.
Winning men's basketball national titles.
Yep.
I mean, they got a monopoly on this MIAA. We need to investigate on that.
They're doing all right. Must be doing illegal recruiting. Oh, wait a minute. You can recruit in college. That's right. Okay, high school sports. Well, let's give you a taste of what took place on Friday night.
Now you have third down and two just outside the five for the Beloit offense, leading by nine. Benson's carried the ball 20 times already. A handoff. They go to Benson again. Benson runs hard and slams his way into the end zone for the Beloit Trojan touchdown. Benson Barrett, not to be denied, his third rushing touchdown tonight, and Beloit's up 22-7. As Owen Islett takes another knee for the victory formation, and for the second straight year, the Beloit Trojan football team is headed to the 2A state semifinals.
Vice comes up in a shotgun, two receivers to each side for Dylan. For Lebo, you just don't want to let anything get behind you here. Dylan wants to throw. He'll play action. Dunlap has beaten the Lebo defense. It's caught by Daxton inside the 10 and whipped to the turf with 2 seconds remaining, and Thunder Ridge will get a timeout. What a play there. Daxton Dunlap all the way down to the 5-yard line. That is a 46-yard pass play from Dylan Bice to Daxton Dunlap. Thunder Ridge will come out first and goal at the 5. A big opportunity for the Longhorns here before halftime to try to tie it and possibly take the lead with a 2-pointer. Dunlap and Randall the near side. Pistol formation for Dylan Bice with Dalton Bice behind him. Dylan on the first and goal at the 5. Play action fake. Rolling to the near side. Wants to throw. Throws over the top. It's caught in the end zone. Near sideline by Dalton Bice to tie the game at 12. As zero show up on the clock here in this first half. A 5-yard touchdown pass from Dylan Bice to Dalton Bice.
So some of the highlights from Thunder Ridge win over Lebo 52-18, and Beloit's win over Hillsborough, Beloit hanging on at the very end, 32-27 after dominating the first half. Benson Barrett ran for over, he had 46 carries for 257 yards and 4 touchdowns, and he scored all the 2-point conversions as well. Offensive line dominated, and Beloit hung on at the end as Hillsborough had a valiant comeback. And so Beloit moves on to state semifinals for the second straight year, 12th time in school history. Thunder Ridge going to state semifinals. And when you look at the high school football playoff brackets real quick, we'll tell you the matchups, and then Dusty will give you the broadcast schedule. Beloit will be hosting Kingman on Friday night. Rossville and Silver Lake, that's the War on 24, Part 2. Class 1A, Olpe will be against Centralia. Inman against Sedgwick. Sedgwick beats Smith Center 49-48 in a heck of a game. Smith Center ends their year at 9-2. And 3A, Frontenac will take on Holton. Andale versus Southeast Saline. Southeast Saline rallied to beat Cheney 34-28. Andale beat Concordia 54-14. Eight-man Division 2, Axtell will be at Thunder Ridge. More on that with Dusty in a moment. Victoria will take on Wheatland-Grinnell. Class 8-man Division 1, it's Canton Galva against Little River. That should be a great game. And then Meade and Hill City. And for 4A, 5A, and 6A, you can check it out, Keisha.org. So Smith Center, heck of a year. Rough way for them to end.
Yeah.
Of course, Concordia going up against Andale. And then Southeast Saline pulls out a great win against Cheney.
Yeah, those are Southeast and Cheney. I was looking forward to that one to see how it would come out. And, boy, it must have been a heck of a game to be able to watch. And, yeah, Smith Center, you knew Sedgwick was going to be a pretty good team, and they finally got them. First time they've advanced this far into the state playoff, Sedgwick. And, you know, they're undefeated and playing real well. And, like you said, Concordia ran up against a tough one. there on Friday night.
Smith Center was up 33-14.
They were,
against Sedgwick.
Yeah, and Sedgwick came back. And I thought Smith Center was going to win it. They went down and scored on their last drive and took the lead back. I was like, I don't know, can Sedgwick do it again? And then they came back down and scored and got the extra point and won it by a point. So, yeah, exciting games on Friday. And then, yeah, Thunder Ridge again winning over Lebo 52-18. And yeah, Lebo had a pretty good game plan in the first half. They let a guy get behind him, as you heard on that playoff or that play-by-play cut. And Thunder Ridge tied it at halftime, and it was all Thunder Ridge in the second half. So Longhorns, now rolling into the semifinals Friday night. We'll have it on KD Country 94. Pregame slated for 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock there from Kensington. Thunder Ridge High School, Thunder Ridge and Axel. Looking forward to that one. It's kind of been what we were expecting really all season, about mid-season. It was when we started kind of feeling that those were the two top teams and probably figured this matchup was coming. So here it is, and we're excited about it coming up on Friday night.
Yep, should be a good couple of games. State semifinals. This is my pet peeve again. I did this with Dusty a year ago. I'll do it again now. If we say sub-state, we need to say semifinals. Say it's a state semifinals, the sub-state round. Because there are a lot of people that don't know what sub-state means, okay? Or because sub-state for basketball isn't the Final Four. That's the sub-state. That's the eight. It's an eight-team tournament. So just I do this all the time. When I promote all this stuff, it's simple. When you're talking second round, you can call it the regionals. I say second round or regional round. When you're talking, some people say the third round. There's no need to say third round. It's the state quarterfinals or sectional. You don't third round. So you're going to call it the fifth round when you make the championship game? Okay, you don't go fourth round when you get to the sub-state finals. This is sub, and people say finals, which you think people not knowing for sure think that's the championship. No. It's a sub-state championship game, but it's just the round. So this is the sub-state is state semifinals. And to me, when you say state semifinals, you got a lot more people to understand what you're talking about.
For sure, yeah.
So we need to promote it that way. I don't know why Keisha does this. They do it all the time. It's like sectionals should be called quarterfinals. I don't know why we have to say sectionals. Regionals, why not say second round? Just call it second round slash regionals. Sectional, quarterfinals slash sectionals, sub-state slash semifinals, and championship game is pretty clear, I would hope. By district. Well, you tell somebody by districts. Well, what round of the playoffs is that? It's the first round, but some people don't know that either. So it's our job as broadcasters to help explain that to people, and we need to stress that this is the if you say this is the sub-state round, there are many people who have no idea how many teams are left. When I say semifinals, you know there's four left. This is the final four in all classes in football. You are one of the final four remaining. When I say sub-state, you don't typically know that. Now, the diehards do.
Yeah, we've been following along. Many
Let me tell you something. There are a ton of people that jump on the wagon. I know this by watching the video stream numbers.
Or when your kids are playing and when your kids aren't playing,
whole bunch of alums from the schools that didn't pay attention to what was happening with their school until all of a sudden they get in the playoffs. That's what happens. I see it. I got the numbers for the video stream. It goes from 200, 300, 400 people all of a sudden now well over 1,000. And I got a whole bunch more people commenting, and some people don't know how to watch a video stream because they didn't care all year long.
Yeah.
But now they do, which is fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
But those are the fans that don't know what sub-state means. So it's okay to educate them and say it's the state semifinals.
Yeah.
Or the final four, if you want to call it that. But
yeah.
Of course, that's confusing if you're into basketball. But anyway, it should be fun. We'll talk more about those games coming up later this week. But basically, it's Southeast, Beloit, and Thunder Ridge that are left out of the area leagues that we cover. And we'll have Beloit and Thunder Ridge both on the radio coming up on Friday. Looking forward to that. All right, the Chiefs get it done, and here we're back to normal. We got Mitch with some touchdown cuts.
First down and goal to go at the 8 for Patrick Mahomes under center this time. No score. 2:57 to go in the first quarter. Mahomes fakes a handoff to Williams. Now throws it left corner. Caught! Left side! Touchdown! Kansas City! Tyreek Hill! Bling, bling, touchdown machine, an 8-yard reception, burning the Raiders on a corner route. It's an 89-yard touchdown drive. Now the Chiefs have second down, goal to go at the 1-yard line, a minute 45 to go. In the first half, Chiefs lead it 10-7. Williams, they fake to him, they loft the pass, touchdown, Kansas City! The cheetah tastes the sweet nectar in the back of the end zone for the second time in this game. A perfect fake by Patrick Mahomes, and Tyreek Hill was wide open. He could have ran down Las Vegas Boulevard. 7:20 to go, third quarter. The Chiefs have fourth down and goal to go at the 1. 17-14, Kansas City. Snap back. They fake it. And a pass caught by Noah Gray in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Noah Gray, keep that football as you spike it. It is your first National Football League touchdown. And the Chiefs cash in on fourth down and goal to go at the one. Chiefs leading 24-14. Again, Carr, this time stepping up into the pocket. He wants to throw long, and the near side, it is caught at the 20. It's caught right now. The ball's out. The ball's poked out. Picked up by Kansas City. DeSean Jackson had the catch. Now the Chiefs pick it up by Tyrann Mathieu. Tommy Townsend to punt, and now the Chiefs are going to fake it and pick up a first down on the left side to Camp. Sneaky Dave Taube. A fake punt for the Chiefs on fourth down and 7 at their own 47-yard line. Marcus Camp with the fake punt and reception as the Chiefs pull it off. Oh, it's the Chiefs and Raiders. Why not throw a Tommy Townsend pass for a first down of 17 yards? Third down 11. 7 of 13 overall in third down. Snap to the right hip of Mahomes. Moving to his left. Holding it. Now steps up. And is going to pump fake it. Now throws across his body left for the end zone. And the pass is going to be caught in the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Darrell Williams doing his best Kelsey and Tyreek Hill impersonation. Wrestles the ball from Jonathan Abram. What a play by D-Will Darrell Williams. Just yanking the ball from the Raider defender for a touchdown. Second down 7. They fake a toss. Now Mahomes looking for the end zone. Pass caught. Touchdown, Kansas City. On an out pattern in the end zone to Byron Pringle. And a terrific fake toss and a 22-yard touchdown pass. Mahomes to Pringle.
And the Chiefs win last night. They route the Raiders 41-14 was the final. And going back over this game, the Chiefs, 3 and out on their first possession, but the defense got it done, get the ball back. Chiefs go down the field and score. They get another stop with their defense, and then they run 2 returners back on a punt return. Mike Hughes, a return all the way to the 50, but then lowers his shoulder, takes on the punter. He dislodges a football. It's a fumble, and I was like, oh, my goodness, here we go again. I mean, the Chiefs could have easily been up 14-0 just like that and delivered a kill shot early. Instead, Hughes fumbles. So then, of course, what happens? The Raiders score. It's 7-7. Then eventually it's 17-7. Chiefs miss a field goal before halftime because Butker was due to miss one. I predicted that one. I called it with my son watching on the couch. I said, you know, everybody's going to think he's going to make this 46-yarder. I said, he's been so good, he's due to miss one, and he did. So it was 17-7. And then the Raiders get the ball second half, and boom, they go down and score 17-14, and you're thinking, oh, man, this is going to come down to the wire. But the Chiefs offensively did what they had to do, and some of the luck that's been bad luck for the Chiefs, like almost every single batted ball has been intercepted, right? Any drop has been fumbled by a Chiefs has been recovered by the other team. Law of averages are you're going to recover half of the fumbles you fumble, and you're going to have half of those batted balls hit the turf instead of being picked off on deflections. So the Chiefs have been kind of snake-bitten. They've had a lot of bad luck this year with some of those bounces of the pigskin. But when you start winning or when you start getting some of those bounces, things kind of start to turn your way. Last night, you heard DeSean Jackson. He fumbled the football. He was going in for a touchdown, and he fumbled the ball. Rashad Fenton didn't give up on the play, punched the ball out. Tyrann Mathieu with the recovery. It was 24-14, and that was a gigantic play in the game, a huge break that went the Chiefs' way. That was something the Chiefs were doing, basically. We get inside the 40, we make a great play, and then we fumble the ball away. Well, that was the Raiders with DeSean Jackson last night. So instead of it being 24-21, it's 24-14. And then the Chiefs go up 27-14. Earlier in the game, Tyreek Hill fumbled the ball on an end-around, and it bounced right back into his hands. He caught it on the fly and kept running with it. That would have bounced a different way earlier in the season. So once again, the Chiefs caught a few breaks. And sometimes people believe that you make your own breaks. If you're playing well, you make your own breaks. That could be. And then the Chiefs are up 27-14, the fake punt. On fourth down and 7, up 27-14, and as soon as they snapped it, I noticed Townsend. I thought there was a little different look to him. And boom, he throws the pass to Marcus Kemp, a laser. Perfect throw by Townsend. Fake punt is perfect, and the Chiefs kept the drive alive. More on that drive in a moment. Here's Andy Reid on the fake punt on 4th and 7.
We saw that it was available, you know, and so they were cheating back a bit, and you got a punter that can throw the ball, and he does it every day in practice, and you've got Camp out there who's a good receiver. So, yeah, there's a risk involved, but we thought the benefit was even greater.
Okay, so the Chiefs get the fake punt. It's 27-14. Patrick Mahomes did a wonderful job last night of taking what the defense gave him. He had one really poor decision, and he got away with it. And that was, it was 27-14. The Raiders had four men in the box. I was watching that every play last night. Every play, I was watching that with my oldest, and I said, listen, this is simple. If there's five or six or less in the box, you run it or a short pass. If there's seven, eight in the box, now you try to stretch it and go vertical. So on the play, Mahomes only had four men in the box, four-man defensive front. There's no backers in the box, no safeties. They're all playing deep. And Mahomes decides to try to force it to Mecole Hardman and should have been picked off. Somehow, it was not intercepted. Earlier in the year, that would have been picked off. Last night, the Chiefs caught that break. Should have been intercepted. It was a horrendous decision by Patrick Mahomes. A horrible decision. And it was really the only bad one he had all night, to be quite honest with you. There was another one that could have been picked off. That's where Hill and him weren't on the same page. Hill was supposed to keep going. He stopped. Mahomes led him, and that was almost picked off. That was between him and Hill. But this one was all on Mahomes. So what does Mahomes do after forcing the ball? On the very next play, he scrambles, and it looks like he's going to run it. And at the last moment, he throws one. And that, too, I don't know, was the greatest decision in the world. Mm-hmm. But Darrell Williams made it look like a brilliant decision with a sensational catch. And as my oldest son said, where was that in the Super Bowl last year? I'm like, exactly. It was off his helmet last year. And so then the Chiefs are up 34-14, and the game is over. The game is over at that point. Remember Mahomes, he's broken, according to Ryan Clark and other people on ESPN, because that's what they want you to do, talk about everything they say. Of course he wasn't broken, he just needed some tweaks. That's the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of him not being stubborn, forcing the ball. It's a matter of him and Andy Reid not being stubborn, forcing the ball, and taking what the defense gives you. He did more of that against Green Bay, but the Chiefs were dropping passes, having penalties. So, like Seth Kizer said, this is something he was already doing last week against Green Bay. It's just that they didn't get the points because the team didn't help around him. So Mahomes knew all along that the defense would get it going again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes with we've done it before. I mean, we've done it the last few seasons. We were doing it at the beginning of this season. We were moving the ball and making a lot of stuff happen. We were just turning the ball over. And then we went through a little spell where we weren't making these drives and continuing these drives. But we were still finding ways to win. I knew we were going to click back into it. I've been saying it for weeks. I was like, we're going to find it. I mean, we have the guys. We have too many guys that work hard. We have too many great coaches that put in the time. That we're gonna find a way to get stuff going, and if the defense is playing like that, I mean, don't let that get overlooked at how they're playing. I mean, that's gonna make us a great football team.
Well, and Mahomes says they got a little swag back.
Shane Buechele came up to me and showed me this video with this kid, and he was saying, "I got my swagger back," and so that was something that was kind of my like motto this week, and I think the whole team kind of got that swag back, and we're gonna try to keep that thing rolling.
But last night was just a little bit different, according to Mahomes, in pregame.
I think it was in pregame. I mean, you could just feel the energy from the guys. I mean, everybody was ready to go this game. We obviously haven't offensively played the way we wanted to, but we've been finding ways to get wins. And so I think guys have been just steady with the process of getting better and better. I thought pregame, you could feel that energy, and I think guys wanted to be on Sunday Night Football playing in a stadium like this against a team like that.
Andy Reid, very pleased all the way around with his team in all three phases.
Defensively, I thought we really came out with a great game plan, and the guys executed very well. Everybody had a piece of this, so I thought the defense really played well. And offensively, we likewise were able to do some good things, and you know, a lot of numbers for Pat, a lot of numbers for Tyreek and Kels, and then Darrell Williams. I mean, had over 100 yards receiving, which I thought was great. Third downs were great, both sides of the ball, the third downs. And then special teams. Special teams, I thought, did a solid job the whole night. And then you add in the fake punt, which was great. I mean, that helps keep people off balance just a bit. Dave had a nice plan for him. EB had a nice plan offensively, and then Spags defensively. It was a solid performance all the way around.
Every team, every year, a little bit different, according to Andy, when it comes to finding their identity.
That you have to develop your own personality. Every team's different every year. And so, yeah, you can't worry about the expectations and all that stuff. You got to get down the nitty-gritty and build it. And so our guys have kind of done that, and they're getting to know each other better. And we've got to keep plugging away.
So So Mahomes, the broken quarterback, 35 of 50 last night for 406 yards and 5 touchdowns and no interceptions. I wonder who ESPN's going to talk about that's broken this week. Perhaps they should focus on a 44-year-old guy for Tampa who's thrown 5 interceptions the last 2 games called Tom Brady. But you know what they did last night after that game that they lost? They talked all about the defense was the problem. They didn't say anything about Brady being the problem. Convenient. So anyway, here's the thing about the Chiefs, and I've been saying this for the last couple weeks, but I've been a little reserved in saying it because I look at who the Chiefs played. Daniel Jones, the Giants are banged up. Jordan Love, first ever start. Last night it was Derek Carr. Granted, they're missing Henry Ruggs, who would have stretched the field, and he, of course, is in prison right now or out on bail, whatever. But you can see the last 3 or 4 weeks, the Chiefs are starting to see their identity on defense. They're, with Melvin Ingram added, they put Jones inside. He's much more effective inside. Now they got threats on the edge. Frank Clark's healthier, so he's starting to get a little bit more pressure and making a few more plays. And now you have Willie Gay and Nick Bolton on the field at the same time, even with Hitchens when they have 3 backers. So now they got a little bit of experience, but then they got the speed with those two. Thornhill's playing like he's supposed to have played probably at the beginning of the year, but they went with Sorensen. Now Sorensen and Neiman aren't playing as many snaps. They probably play too many as it is. But when they come in, to me, I'm okay with them just flat out blitzing if they're going to come in. Sorensen got a pick last night. It was a complete jump ball, easy play for the most part. Sorensen got it. Maybe that'll help his confidence. But the Chiefs defense last night, Legarius Sneed, I thought was phenomenal. I thought Charvarius Ward, you know, that's another thing people forgot about. Ward was hurt for a good stretch. Now you get a tall corner taking away your best receiver. And he did a great job on Davante Adams last week. And last night, there wasn't a lot of targets towards Charvarius Ward if you go back and watch the tape. Renfrow did catch a touchdown against him. So now you don't have to have Hughes or a DeAndre Baker undersized going up against a tall receiver with Ward healthy and on the one side. And then Fenton's done a nice job in the nickel and dime packages. And, of course, Matthew, they're communicating better. You can see that as well. And having Thornhill on the field, he's more athletic. Gay is more athletic. Bolton's more athletic. And they're able to rotate their defensive tackles. Reed even got a sack last night. Naughty got a sack last night. Naughty was good against the run. You know, I was worried about Josh Jacobs, like Steve Spagnuolo was, about the running game. He didn't do much last night.
No.
So the Chiefs defensively are improving, and it was against a legitimate offense in Derek Carr and the Raiders, a first-place team until last night. And so now they're going to get the ultimate test here because they get the Cowboys, who have one of the best offenses in football. Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and Ezekiel Elliott. So it's going to be a huge test for the Chiefs coming up this weekend. We'll know a little bit more about the Chiefs. But we said going into these 3 games, when the Chiefs were 4-4, they need to go 2-1 and have to beat the Raiders. Well, they're already 2-0. They got house money and they got the Cowboys coming up. And I predicted it. We talked about it on Friday. I said, listen, Broncos lose to the Eagles, Chargers lose to the Vikings. And I wasn't worried about the Broncos losing. I pretty much thought they were going to. The question, and I felt good about the Chiefs beating the Raiders. My question was, could the Vikings actually finish a game? And they did. And here we are. We joked about it on Friday that the Chiefs, when all these Chiefs fans jumped off the wagon, and now we're breaking the axle, jumping back on. And by the way, I think all those fans that jumped off the wagon early that are jumping on right now need to pay a toll. They need to pay a toll to get back on to help fix the axle that they're going to break because they jumped off. Now they're jumping back on. We said it Friday. If the Chiefs win against the Raiders, Chargers lose, Broncos lose, which we predicted, the Chiefs would be in first place alone on Monday morning on this show, and here we are. After the 19 turnovers, still the worst in the league, with a defense that was horrendous the first part of the season, an offense that scored a total of 36 points the last 3 weeks and still went 2-1. A team that a lot of Chiefs fans already written off, said this team has no chance to make the playoffs, we got to blow it up, Mahomes is broken, blah, blah, blah. Do you know there's only one team with more wins in the AFC than the Chiefs right now? Only one team in the whole AFC has more wins than the Chiefs. The Tennessee Titans. Yep. That's it. Nobody else in the AFC has more wins than the Chiefs. The Chiefs went from the number 9 seed yesterday to start the day to the number 4 seed in a first game at home in the playoffs since they lead their division. And as I've been preaching the last 3 or 4 weeks, forget about what everybody else is doing in the AFC. All you need to worry about is win your divisional games. You win your divisional games, you take care of business against the Chargers, the Raiders, the Broncos, you're going to be right there at the end with a chance to win the division. And if you win the division, you're automatically a 4 seed. Automatically a 4 seed. Now, could the Chiefs move up? Yeah, they could move up. There's no doubt about it. You look at the NFL and what happened. And by the way, yesterday, Darrell Williams, 11 carries, 43 yards, 9 catches, 101, and a touchdown. Kelce, 8 catches, 119. Hill, 7 catches, 83, 2 touchdowns. And we mentioned this. People are all about Mahomes and all his struggles. Every single quarterback in this league has had their struggles. Dan Marino took the league by storm, suddenly had struggles, threw a lot of interceptions. John Elway had his struggles for many years. Peyton Manning came in the league, and he threw tons of interceptions. Troy Aikman was horrendous behind a horrible offensive line his first year. All those guys I just mentioned, Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Tom Brady, they benched him against the Chiefs on a Monday night game, for crying out loud, all right? Brady, there have been times where he thought he was done, especially his last year in New England, right? Well, all he did is come back and win a Super Bowl. I thought these guys were washed up. Aaron Rodgers, he's had his ups and his downs. And it's the same thing. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is 26 years of age, and he's took the league by storm, and then teams made adjustments, and now the Chiefs are finally countering those adjustments. And the whole key to it is patience. Something fans don't have, but preach to their own players. Patience. Mahomes last night was patient. This was simple. When there's four or five in the box, which the Raiders, there were a handful of plays, they had four in the box. Four! That's easy. You run or dump it to your running back. How many times did Darrell Williams catch the ball and go 10 yards? Or he threw it to Kelsey after he was blocking. There's nobody there because they're playing deep. They want to take away the deep stuff. Crossing patterns are there. I mean, the only bad thing last night is they didn't get Josh Gordon involved. I thought they might last night. Mm-hmm. But the Chiefs are, as long as Andy Reid and, more importantly, Mahomes can stay patient. And that was the first game this year he stayed patient. They scored 41 points and had 500 yards. And I've said this for a while. This will only make Mahomes a better quarterback. All this adversity will only make him a better quarterback. He'll learn to be a better quarterback. He'll learn to be more patient. Because if he doesn't, he's going to be in trouble, and he'll be out of the league in a few years. Mm-hmm. So the key is to become a better quarterback. And here, to me, last night was the perfect, perfect medicine to cure the Chiefs' ills. And let me explain. Mahomes and Andy, I'm sure, have talked about take the easy stuff, take the easy stuff, don't force it, don't force it. And there have been games where they have for a while, but then they can't do it for four quarters. Last night they did. And finally, they have evidence to prove the hypothesis. And that is, if you just stay patient and take all the underneath stuff, which the defense is giving and daring you to do, if you just do that, here's your evidence. 41 points, 500 yards, Mahomes 35 of 50 for 406, five touchdowns, no interceptions. If that doesn't sell Patrick Mahomes on being patient and taking the small stuff, I don't know whatever will. Mm-hmm. And now what will happen is defenses will have to make an adjustment, the counter adjustment. Okay, fine. The Chiefs took the league by storm. They go vertical. Now, after 3 years, finally the league decided cover two, take away the deep stuff, put four, five, six guys in the box. We don't think Andy can be patient enough. He doesn't like to run the ball enough. We don't think Mahomes is going to take the easy stuff. Okay, that worked for a while. But now, if the Chiefs stick to it, and I don't know if they will, but they should after what they did last night. If they stick to that, now defenses have to make an adjustment, don't they? And what's the adjustment? You're going to blitz? Good luck with that. That doesn't work well. Okay? So your other adjustment's going to be what? Go back to playing standard defenses where you have six or seven in the box instead of four or five. You know what that does? Now it opens up the field again for Kelsey and Hill, maybe one underneath, one to stretch it vertically. And now defense is like, God, we thought we had the cheat code, and he's figured out the cheat code. They finally figured it out that you just have to throw it and dump it to Darrell Williams. All you got to do is have Kelsey block for a second and dump it to him for 1 yard. All they got to do is hand the ball off and run left or right on first down. If the Chiefs stick to it, and I've said it all year long, the Chiefs' worst enemy is themselves. It's themselves. Their biggest opponent is themselves. If they can stick to it, and this should prove positive of the hypothesis, this proves the theory correct, that if you are patient against defenses that will dare you to throw the ball underneath, dare you to run the ball, and don't respect the running game, and don't respect that you're going to take the easy stuff, and they're going to put four men in the box, not even six, four, sometimes five. Hello, take it. Just take it. And the Chiefs did last night. 10 play, touchdown drive. 11 play, 13 play. I know it doesn't score as quick. You don't get any more points for scoring quickly, except you get more possessions. And in some ways, that helps your defense because they get a rest for a longer period of time. And let's be honest, the Chiefs offensively until the last three games, their problems when they're scoring 31 points a game was turnovers. It wasn't defenses were really slowing them down. They were beating themselves. Now, they didn't turn the ball over again, okay? They didn't turn the ball over except for the fumble. Mm-hmm. Offensively, no turnovers for the second straight game. And I've said all year long, they're going to figure out, they will eventually stop turning the ball over. And you're definitely going to not turn the ball over as much if you're taking safe passes on checkdowns. And I don't want Mahomes to be check down Charlie. But let me tell you something. When you have four in the box, you shouldn't be chucking it deep. like he did on one play. That was a horrendous decision that should have been intercepted. He got away with it. That was the only time he really made a horrible decision. Otherwise, he stuck true to form. Is there a little bit of that wild horse in him that's still going to take that shot when he shouldn't? Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. But if he only does it once or twice a game, hopefully it doesn't come back to haunt this team. What he'd been doing there for a while was taking too many shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is going to make him a better quarterback. And once you've figured this out, if you stick to this plan, now defenses are like, what the heck do we do now?
Well, that's what it's about, right?
And you get Clyde Edwards-Helaire back, who's quicker than the running backs they got.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be, if you settle on checkdowns with him, he's going to get bigger gains than Darrell Williams did last night.
Yeah. Yeah, if he's playing 100% and playing the right way, he's absolutely going to get bigger and better gains than Darrell Williams. I mean, that's the whole thing that professional sports leagues or really any sport is about, is when people adjust to what you're doing, there's got to be another counter adjustment somewhere. If you're going to have success in this league, or again, in most sports, if somebody has figured you out, then it's your job to figure out how and why they figured you out and what you need to do to attack the difference in scheme that they're bringing to you compared to what they usually do, right?
You can't keep doing the same thing, banging your head against a wall.
No. And so you figure different things out. You find out, hey, this is open, short routes are open, routes out of the flat, wheel routes, whatever you're doing with your running backs and trying to get them more involved, because you know that that's not the focal point of your offense. So they're not focusing on Darrell Williams right now. Mm-hmm. The defenses don't care about Darrell Williams until you start beating the other defense with Darrell Williams and with the short pass game and stop taking so many shots. Stay back there in that pocket and understand you don't have to rush out, because defenses are scheming for you to trust that you're going to panic and run out of the pocket and try to make a play. And so that's how they set up their defense. That's how they scheme. And so now you've got to counter adjust to that. And, I think it's taken a little bit longer than you might like, but they've figured some things out here and they're moving forward with this offense.
The other thing too is when you're able to throw it short, when a guy's wide open, you get the ball out of your hands quicker. And that means Mahomes doesn't desert the pocket prematurely.
Yeah.
That was another thing that stood out to me last night. It was finally, I think people are like, finally the Chiefs figured it out. Like Collinsworth said it last night. He's very good at what he does. He says, listen, he's playing the role of quarterback. He's actually playing quarterback tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. And it looked pretty easy. And that's what's scary for the rest of the league. Very scary. Speaking of the rest of the league, the Bills win. They're 6-3, beat the Jets 45-17. Tampa Bay lost after a bye week. They lost to Washington football team 29-19. And Brady threw a few more picks in that one. Cowboys beat the Falcons 43-3. That's a nice bounce back. Now they go to Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs next Sunday. 3:25 kickoff, 2 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 Lake. The Titans are 8-2. They won 6 in a row. 23-21 over the Saints. I'm watching Tony Dungy last night on NBC. And he's like, well, what makes them different than everybody else? And Tony goes, well, they're the one team that hasn't tripped up against somebody. I'm like, they lost to the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, do your homework. Titans over the Saints 23-21. The Colts beat the Jaguars 23-17. Colts are in the midst right there. They're 5-5. The Steelers and the Lions. Steelers without Big Ben because of COVID. Lions, they're just bad and end up being in a tie. 16-16. The funny part about this, Lions are 0-8-1. Steelers 5-3-1. There were players that did not know that an NFL game can end in a tie. I don't want to be
it's
too.
Like this happens every time there's a tie that you've never been in one before.
this is going to be, I should be very careful on how I say this, but you've got to be not very bright to not know that rule. Here's why. First of all, you're either not very bright or you just simply don't pay attention. When they do the coin toss to start overtime, which is on the loudspeaker across the entire stadium, they go through everything and they say the game ends in a tie at the end of this period. They specifically say if nobody scores at the end of the 2-minute extra session, the game will end in a tie. How players on both the Lions and Steelers yesterday, who after the game said they had no idea. I mean, Donovan McNabb didn't know in 2008, which was really crazy. That's a quarterback. If you as an NFL player don't know the NFL game can end in a tie, your IQ should be checked. Now, some people argue, well, that just goes to show that these players don't really love the game because they don't even pay close attention to it. They just treat it as a job. They show up, they play, and they're just focused on doing what they do. And I think there might be a little bit to that. Like, we all diehard fans, we know these rules.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the players are like, I don't need to know the rules. All I need to know is carry the ball, run as hard as I can. like Najee Harris,
yeah,
who didn't know about the rule. But it's still mind-boggling.
I guess he's a rookie, so I'll give him a little bit, but not much.
Not much.
Because they do say it at the beginning of overtime.
Yes, they do. Patriots roll the Browns 45-7. I had the Patriots in the playoffs before the year began, and the Patriots, a big, big, big win. Their defense is playing well. Vikings beat the Chargers 27-20, helped out the Chiefs. The Panthers beat the Cardinals. Cardinals without DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray. Panthers got Cam Newton. They signed. He had a touchdown run, touchdown pass. Eagles beat the Broncos. Broncos did not follow up their great win. That was a dud yesterday, 30-13. Couldn't stop the run. Devontae Smith's having a good run now as a rookie. Packers beat the Seahawks. Russell Wilson back, and he was Rusty Russ. 17-0. Packers didn't look that great either, but they did win. And the Chiefs, of course, blew out the Raiders 41-14. Monday Night Football tonight. The Niners need a win in a desperate way. Rams trying to avoid a two-game losing streak. Rams at the Niners tonight on ESPN for Monday Night Football. You take a look at the conference standings. Here we are. Tennessee's 8-2. They're the 1 seed. Buffalo 6-3-2. Ravens are the 3 seed at 6-3. The Chiefs sitting at the 4 at 6-4. Then you got Pittsburgh 5-3-1. New England 6-4. And if the season ended today, the Chargers had the final spot at 5-4. Which means if the season ended today, the Chiefs would host the Steelers in the first round of the playoffs. Okay. Now, let me point something out here. The Bills only have a half game lead over New England for the division lead. And New England and Buffalo play twice in the span of 4 weeks, and they'll play in a couple weeks in round number one. There's no guarantee the Bills are going to even win that division.
Yeah.
Now, why I bring this up, if you want to start getting greedy as a Chiefs fan, okay, now we lead the division. We're going to get on a roll here. If the Chiefs beat the Cowboys, which is an if, which Cowboy team will show up? If the Chiefs beat the Cowboys, the Chiefs will be 7-4 going into the bye. All right? They will, at worst, have the second most wins in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills, I don't know who they play next week, but the Bills, the Chiefs do not have the tiebreaker against the Bills or the Ravens. The Titans, I don't think they're going to catch them anyway, so I'm not worried about that tiebreaker. The Browns tiebreaker doesn't even apply anymore because the Browns are now 5-5, maybe fading. The Chargers, the Chiefs will play them again, so they can even up that tiebreaker if the Chiefs beat the Chargers in L.A., which I know is an if. So my point being is that there are two teams ahead of the Chiefs in the standings that they do not have the tiebreaker. If the Chiefs can get hot, I think the Ravens will lose a few more games. The Bills, I'm not so sure of. My point is the Chiefs could move up to 3 and maybe even the number 2 seed.
Yeah. We've kind of
now, there's no bye with that, of course.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about that at times here throughout the season. If they can get this thing figured out, it's not – the AFC's not what we thought it was going to be.
No.
And
the NFC looks better.
Yeah, and so there's an opportunity here to get a good seed and – at least, you know, get one playoff game at home, maybe two. You don't, again, like you said, you don't have the bye anymore if you're the 2 seed. But, you know, get up there and see how they fall, right? Like, just figure it out and just play your game. Control what you can control, and you're going to be right where you want to be here at the end of the year. And you know, even fighting for the number one spot, maybe. If you can win every game like they did last time they were 6-4, right? And then just finished up, but obviously they had to get to 6-4 this year to do that. But it's setting up fine for them moving forward if they can just keep playing the way they are.
Listen, the Colts play the Bills. The Colts have a lot to play for. 5-5 at the Bills. I would take the Bills to win at home, but the Colts they could beat the Bills. All of a sudden, the Bills are 6-4, and the Ravens got to go to the Bears, and the Bears, Justin Fields. I mean, the Bears should have beat the Steelers, so that's not going to be an easy game for the Ravens either. So you could be, you know, let's go through this again now. We said it on Friday. Well, if this and this happens, the Chiefs will be in first place. If the Chiefs beat the Cowboys this weekend, come Monday morning on the sports ticket, we could be talking about the Chiefs with the number 2 seed by themselves in the AFC because the Bills would lose to the Colts, be 6-4. The Ravens lose to the Bears, they're 6-4, and the Chiefs are 7-4, and they'd be right behind the Titans. It's, once again, plausible.
Yeah.
Now, the Titans aren't going to lose, I don't think, to the Texans. They'll move to 9-2, I would imagine.
Yeah, you'd think.
But they did lose to the Jets. So, earlier in the year. So it is really interesting. There's nobody in the AFC. It, like you said last week, I think you put it, you're like, man, everybody said, hey, the Chiefs are having problems. You know what? Let's keep them in it to make it interesting. And they have. The AFC's kept the Chiefs in it. Luckily, the Chiefs are in the right conference this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. And then the NFC is pretty loaded. Cardinals, though, got their second loss. Packers now would be the 1 seed. They beat the Cardinals head-to-head. And Cowboys are right there at 7-2. Buccaneers are 6-3. And the Rams are 7-2. Of course, the Rams are in the same division as the Cardinals. That's why they're below the Buccaneers in the pecking order. And if the season ended today, the Panthers would be in as a 7th seed in the playoffs. So there are three teams in the NFC to have 7 or 8 wins. Actually, there are 4 teams in the NFC have 7 or 8 wins. Only one team in the AFC has 7 or 8 wins, and that's the Titans. So the NFC is definitely deeper and stronger right now.
Yeah.
And so the Chiefs have had a bad start, but luckily they've been in the right division. The division has come back to them. The conference has come back to them. And now the Chiefs are starting to go in the right direction and trend upward.
Yeah. It's a good way to be trending, right?
Uh-huh.
Like let's keep it rolling and kind of put that little stretch behind us and move forward.
All aboard! The Chiefs bandwagon. Hop on, boys and girls. Pay the toll. That's the penalty for jumping off way prematurely. Okay. College basketball. KU beat Tarleton State 88-62. And Ochai Agbaji, 25 points, 11-16. From the floor, KU will take on Stony Brook on Thursday at 6:30 pregame on ZNI 6.3 Lake. Wichita State men beat South Alabama 64-58. They're 2-0. K-State women are 3-0. They won 76-44 over Western Kentucky. Ayoka Lee, 33 points and 13 rebounds. She is the 44th player in K-State history to score 1,000 points in her career, and she's off to a tremendous start as the Wildcats of K-State. The women are 3-0. Anything else to add,
sir? I saw I had that game on in the background, the K-State women. She had 25-10 with 2 minutes left in the first half. I'm like, man, this is she didn't hardly even play in the second half and finished with 33-13.
Imagine if she played 40 minutes.
I mean, she'd be just the top of the scoring list would just be Ioka Lee like 5 or 6
yes.
times and then Brittany Chambers at 42.
Yes.
For
I think
single
you're
game
right.
scoring.
She is playing some great basketball. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Or not weekend. It's Monday. Gosh, I wish there'd be another
weekend.
Have a great weekend coming up later this weekend. We'll have high school football Friday. We'll talk all about that again tomorrow. It's Monday.